The idea is you get out of North Ministry, you start your journey, you become a journeyman.
That's the idea.
Okay, let's stay high level, okay? You're getting into too much detail.
Okay.
What changed? Why are you back?
He just kept begging me to come back and like, dude, all right.
Welcome back to the Passion for Craft podcast, season 3, and back as it should be.
Here we go.
Let's go.
Journeyman and master by my side, teaching me all that they know. Welcome back, guys. How we doing?
Doing good. Happy to be back.
That's right.
Not as a guest this time.
Yeah, that's happy exciting. That you're back on board.
Yeah,
feels good. So what changed? Why are you back? Not that I'm just upset about it.
He just kept begging me to come back and like, dude, all right.
Fine. Stop talking about it. Obviously.
No, we just see each other in passing and I kind of mentioned like, hey, I kind of miss being on it. And you're like, well, we'd love to have you back,
sure.
You know? And then we saw you at a job a while back and you were like, you're coming back, right? And I'm like, yeah, I mean, I'd love to. He's like, good, because I've been telling people you're coming back. I'm like, all right, let's do it.
You weren't around last season. You were kind of watching out for your family, I think, right?
Yeah,
And so just managing life.
There were a lot of decision trees headed your way on life, right? Like what your job was going to look like with your company, with your YouTube channel, with everything, right? Like,
yeah, it was just really a personal time to find balance for everything. And I seem to be like not good at multitasking. So I've gotten a lot better at it.
Oh,
and
cool.
I feel great to be back. I feel like I've kind of figured out the balance in life a little bit more. So yeah, I just kind
we're
of
glad we're glad you're here. I think you add a lot to the podcast, so we appreciate
you. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was listening to y'all by yourself and it was rough. No,
you said it. You're right.
I did follow along and you guys are awesome. Like, it was really cool. And I enjoyed all the guests too from North Bennett Street.
Yeah, that was cool.
Who was the teacher?
Was it Brock? Steve or Brock? Yeah.
Brock, yeah. I think it was Brock who was like, yeah, you've learned a lot more now, Jackson. And Brent's like, yeah, I kind of wish he was back when he didn't know as much, because now he's like piping up to everything. He's like, yeah. No, that actually is this. And you're like,
you should have seen him in my office just a little bit ago.
I thought we weren't going to be able to record because he was so upset.
I was just like, okay, leave. I have these tools that I bought at auction, a big slick and some different stuff. And I was like, he's doing timber framing right now. So I'm like, hey, it'd be great if you want to use the slick. And he did one of those things. He looked a gift horse in the mouth. And he basically said,
I don't know if I want this.
A slick is basically a big chisel. And it's, you know, 3 inches wide to 4 inches wide. It's the steel on it's, you know, 14, 16 inches long.
Massive.
Big old handle on it. They're a cool tool. And he looked at it and was like, I was just like, you jerk. Get
and you're
out of here.
Offering it to him?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can I defend myself at all? Or do we need to
Is that not what happened?
Can I defend myself?
Is that not what happened?
Can I defend myself? Basically, yeah, it is just like, it's awesome. It's in great shape, but it does need some work. It has a little bit of a bend to it, and it's either from years of not being used, or it's from someone using it with a little bit of a bend to it so they could get at an angled sweep or something. But if I was to use it, you know, in an ideal world, I would be able to reference off of something, and so you're covering like a large distance.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons why I didn't take it is because I don't have any time right now.
I'm yawning right now. You can't see it on the podcast. It's just like...
If I'm going to use that tool, I have to sharpen it, take the chips out of the metal.
I'm good.
Exactly. That's exactly what happened. It would take some work to get it in premier quality. I mean, it would take a few hours, if not a couple days.
It'd take 5 hours in order to get it back in good shape. But I would love to have a slick. I would love to do that. I'd also have to I'd have to travel with it. It'd have to go in my bag. I'd probably get my bag searched. You know, can't bring a slick onto a plane.
giant chisel
sticking out of my backpack. Anyway, there's some logistical things. I wasn't trying to look at gift for it. It is. He's got a really awesome collection of tools, but it was pretty funny when he said I did that, because I was like, yeah, I guess I did do that.
I'll take it.
Yeah, exactly.
No, all the timber framing you're doing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other question that was brought up is, are you still the apprentice?
Yeah.
You're in your apprenticeship.
In England, a typical apprenticeship was, what, 5-7 years? It was like a long time. So
we get to have you as an apprentice for at least 5 or 7 years.
Yes. Even when I'm done with North Bennett Street School, I think I'm an apprentice for many more years.
The idea is you get out of North Bennett Street, you start your journey, you become a journeyman.
That's the idea, right?
But I think in general, what you will have learned there by the time you're done, it'll be, and I still contend this, that it is a 2-year speed course in exposure to so many different types of carpentry and the history of carpentry. And I don't think you have the skill, right? I mean, you don't have the skill because you haven't practiced enough, but you are exposed to
I've been exposed to so much. And I think, like, if it was we were building doors and windows the entire time we're at North Bennett Street School, then you could maybe make the argument in today's world where a lot of, like, apprenticeships and everything else are somewhat more compact, a little bit faster, whatever. You could make the argument that at that point, I'm a journeyman walking out because I've been only focusing on doors and rail windows. But, like, we've done tool restoration, we've done window restoration, we've done glazing, we've done siding, we've done roofs, we've just done such a wide berth of things that I would say, like, I'm closer down the track of, like, a builder apprentice, like, just knowing a full scope of work behind a house, more so than just saying, like, I'm an apprentice carpenter.
That's so valuable.
Does that make sense?
That's probably the best way to do it. Because, like, just to contrast what I've done, mm-hmm. I would only know about those things when I encounter them on a job.
Right.
And I would be, like, learning it in real time. Right. Versus, like, you have the knowledge of, like, a little bit of knowledge and everything. Yeah. You're like, oh, I've seen this before.
Right.
You know, how are you, like, another year there?
Another year there. So I'm done in May.
You just started year two, like a week ago or whatever.
That's correct. Yeah. 2 weeks ago.
And so the schedule for the next 6-8 months, timber framing for a while, right?
I counted it out because I'm not jazzed about timber framing. I've been very honest about this with my professors and everyone knows. Mainly just because I'm not, like, we don't see it a ton down here. There's not big forests that we're drawing these large timbers from and framing houses with. Like, if we do that, they would have been imported from a railroad or whatever. Anyway. So I'm not jazzed about timber framing. We've got 11 days of it. 2 days down, we've got 9 days left of timber framing, where we're going to be building this timber frame structure for one of the cabinet and furniture making instructors. So we're going to learn how to do scribe rule, square rule. Basically, scribe rule is you just...
There are different ways of joining the timbers.
Scribe rule, you cut it and you fit it. Square rule, you have a standard 2 inches off the edge that you have a standard board length. And so it standardizes the process. You don't have to scribe everything in place.
So the curriculum, you don't choose the curriculum. Like, you couldn't say, I'd rather do something else.
So everyone will get the same preservation carpentry thing. And because it's New England and because that's how we used to build houses, we're going to learn how to do timber framing, mm-hmm. which makes total sense. It's
makes sense. Awesome.
But also, even though I'm not, like, a timber framer, even though that's not, like, my, you know, gets me going, I was talking to this timber framer, and I was like, oh, how do you guys do it? Are you square rule, scribe? What do you do? He's like, oh, we just use timber locks, just drive them through. I was like, oh.
Timber locks?
A big bolt?
Yeah.
Is that really?
Yeah, yeah.
What?
I-beams, timber locks, that's how they timber frame. He was a modern timber framer, is what he told me.
So they are using... It's not a traditional timber frame. They're basically correct. Building with timbers.
They're decorative.
Correct. Yeah. But they are using them as the framing for the house. But they're just in place with timber locks.
Because I've seen it on some of those ranch projects where it's like, you're going to put a beam up, so you just lag it into the...
Into an I-beam or something? Or into
a rafters and joist. Yeah.
Yeah. But so...
That's crazy.
I don't know. I really didn't see
it. But doesn't that take away, like, the... kind of purpose of timber framing?
You know,
like,
I'd argue that, Richard. Like, that would be a very big argument on my side.
Because if I just see, like, a timber on top of another timber with a big bolt, I'm like, that's not that cool.
Right.
You know?
That's what I would say. I mean, the coolest part about timber framing is you're doing it green, and it dries, and it just forms into its rigid, solid shape, and it's never going to move, you know? Or if it does, it's because you cut something out of it to make a
A-track. It actually makes sense to me that this modern timber framing company doesn't use any traditional joinery, because I suspect most 99% of people, 95% of people don't care. Mm-hmm. Right? They just want to see the big heavy timbers be able to say, yeah, we timber framed it.
It is a company in Atlanta, so I don't know what Georgia's
history of timber framing
looks like, you know?
Not much.
So
the other thing you see with those big bolts,
yeah,
you can either leave the bolt like exposed or plug it.
Yeah.
And I've seen it where they have like plugs.
And I think it looked like an old, you know, peg.
Yeah.
Basically
tree nail.
That's the other thing too. You leave pegs long in traditional timber framing. You just let them go, you know? So you have a bunch of pegs sticking out of your house and it's really cool. Or you can use them for hat racks and other stuff like that. And
I think even though you're not too jazzed about it, I think that's still pretty cool.
But you only have 11 days of it. That's not very long.
It's not very long. It's 3 weeks because our class days are 4 10-hour days. It's not a ton of time. But then post that, we're going to be doing a timber frame repair, or that's the next section of it. We're actually doing a balloon frame repair with some, like it has a timber frame section of the barn, and then it has a balloon frame section of the barn. And the balloon frame section of the barn is sagging outwards. I mean, in some instances, it's almost at a 45-degree angle on these two walls. It is a bad shape. And our Michael Bray, our instructor, even said, like, this is about as bad as you're going to see it. Like, this is about as bad as I'm comfortable working on. Like, we're going to be able to jack this house up. We're going to be able to do it. But we're going to have, I think, 16 house jacks under this thing. It's a two-story building. And so we're, if you can imagine it, you're going to the first story in some milk barn. So they have a concrete middle sidewalk essentially underneath it, and so you're going to start there and you're going to jack that to the floor of the second story. Then you go to the second story and immediately over that you put another layer of jacks, and so you're jacking both layers of the thing, and then it'll bring the walls from a 45-degree angle out to where we can hang them plumb. And then whenever we get them plumb, then we're going to jack the eaves up, and then we're going to, you know, fix the foundation.
That sounds like a pretty cool project.
It's a really cool project.
Are you able to, like, bring a little camera and show any of this, or is that not allowed?
You know what? For some of our jobs, no. But for that job, yes, I probably can.
Yeah, you should get, like, a little action camera.
That sounds pretty cool.
Just, like, just when you're jacking the thing up, like, that'd be cool to see.
So that's finding it in my budget to get one of
those. So that's a timber restoration.
Your neck thing would be kind of the perfect opportunity for that.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Mm-hmm. What do you have, body cam?
Yeah, pretty much like a police badge cam. Yeah, it just goes around your neck and then straps, and then it shows like what your hands are doing. So like if you're, whatever you're doing, it shows it. There's also, switching topics a little bit, but those Facebook or Meta Ray-Bans or whatever glasses.
Oh, that's not a bad idea.
Where you wear the glasses, but it only does portrait mode, and it only records for 3 minutes.
Oh, interesting.
Which probably rock the
yeah, this will record for as many batteries as you have.
Yeah, yeah.
Forever.
How long does the battery last?
Maybe like an hour and a half to two. And then I think I have a 1 terabyte memory.
Nice. Yeah.
Little SD. All day, 36 hours. Yeah. Wow. So
that's crazy.
So, okay, then you're doing what after the timber frame restoration?
Well, kind of in the midst of that, there's this house in Rockland that is it's like 48 Union Street, Rockland, Mass. We are restoring that kind of. So essentially one of our instructors has a connection with this guy. I think his wife knows his wife kind of deal. The guy's a flipper and I think would prefer to just flip this project. And yeah, so I think that's what he's going to do. And we're coming in and trying to just save as much of the historic parts of this house because it's a really cool
house. Oh, y'all are going to salvage it?
1890s
house. So he's letting us work on the facade. He's paying for materials, but I think the school, just because it's a cool learning opportunity, it's an awesome house. Like, it's got this really cool facade, but we don't have a ton. My crew is Kevin, Ryan, and myself. We're working on doing the columns. There's another crew who are working on this leaded glass, what is it called? Door light?
Fan light.
Phantom light?
What? Fan light? Transom?
Fan light, yeah. They're working on that because the portico has collapsed a little bit, the fan light has crimped. And so one of the panes is shot out and it's lead, so it moves pretty easily. So we can actually save the original window and like repair most of the glass pretty easily because it's lead and it's workable and it's shapeable and it'll move. There's a carving on like the part above the portico, and then there's the old shutters that we're going to repair as well, and then the balustrade.
Okay, let's stay high level. Okay. You're getting into too much detail.
Okay.
Then you restore this house.
Yep.
Okay. Timber frame repair.
Yep.
Then what? And you're laying out just kind of
I don't know when it's going to be, but we're going to do plaster, lime, mortar, masonry for something. And
don't you build a stair?
That's the very end of the year. So we'll build a stair set doing stereotomy at the end of the year. And so I think a couple of our professors took a stereotomy class from a guy who did a compagnon in France and knows a good amount about stereotomy. So they're going to take what they learned from that class and then teach us.
So you're finishing, you know, this 2-year program.
Mm-hmm.
Worthwhile?
Awesome.
Yeah.
I think what you're saying is like it provides such a depth or a breadth of experience.
Like a broad scope of everything.
Because you get to see it all. Like we're seeing so many more things than I think I would have ever seen. Like comparing and contrasting that with like my internship this summer, I worked on this house in place in Boston. I worked on windows the entire time. And so I got a lot of depth on windows. I saw a lot of different problems, but I didn't get to see like the breadth that we got to see with the school year, even in the first year and much less the second year, we're going to see a ton. So
what do you hope to do when you get back to Fort Worth?
I don't know.
I'm hiring.
You are?
Yeah.
That's great. Well, I haven't had any job opportunities.
The builder
yet,
we so work for is a little. No, okay.
Yeah. Well, if he's not good, I'll probably work for you guys.
That's cool. And you had a son?
Had a son.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So big your family's growing?
Yep.
Nice.
Yeah. This is great.
Okay.
That's awesome.
All right. Your turn.
What's no, we're going to Richard.
What?
I was actually been at the South Bennett Street School, building the 10-year window. No, I'm just kidding. My update is really it's like a business growth type thing. And I really feel like we should save that for another episode. I think we had talked a little bit about kind of the gauntlet of what you go through when you're growing. And I feel like that's a whole topic.
And you went through a gauntlet?
Yeah, a gauntlet of
hiring, firing, all the fun stuff.
That whole thing, yeah.
All right, we'll just tease that. We'll leave it there.
Yes,
we can go on.
I have
later.
Some interesting applicants.
All right,
let's
cool.
just say.
So that was when you have a YouTube channel with 500,000 subscribers. That
yeah. So you get some interesting folks, but on the just life, general life thing, no more kids for me. So I got 5 already.
You're saying you got rid of your kids.
Make life easier.
But really just working, trying to be effective, trying to be efficient, getting jobs and talking with different builders. But you're keeping us busy right now. Like it's
the, we got a lot going on, but are you doing as much YouTube stuff?
Yes, I am. I'm doing like 1 a week.
Oh, you are?
Yeah. Back to doing 1 a week.
Okay. Heavy with Windsor, right?
Windsor kind of is taking a back seat right now just because we have so much work with Brent.
Cool.
That the Windsor stuff I can do whenever.
Awesome.
Whereas like he's usually wanting me to hurry up and get stuff done.
I wonder why.
Get out of here. Hurry up and get out of here.
The project managers they want some pretty strict schedules. So yeah. I kind of told my Windsor guy, Dave, there, I'm like, can we do this later? He's like, yeah, we can do this.
Dave
anytime.
Might come on this show.
Yes, I did talk to Dave and he was about it.
Okay.
He's awesome. Like, I want to come on. Because he was going to come up and just visit. I told him I'm back on Passion for Craft and he's like, I'd love to do it. And like, we would love to have you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he'd have some great insights. Mm-hmm. He's a good guy.
He knows so much about the lumber business.
And he's seen so much. He's been all over the country and seen craft and construction and so many different areas. It's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Getting a little hot there, huh?
Yeah.
What? What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Okay. Stop. We're not.
What's going on?
Sorry. We're not putting that. You're going to have to turn that shirt inside out.
What shirt? What's going on?
Oh, my gosh. Okay. This is cute. Oh,
it's been,
my.
One of your favorite companies here. Just okay. It's kind of what I've been up to. This is one of the companies I'm working for.
It's so wrong. It's so wrong. Do you have that shirt?
Are we fired?
I cannot believe you are wearing that.
So,
I mean,
Which one is worse?
Yeah, which one's worse?
That is worse.
I think this is worse too.
That's worse.
Because this removes the soul of
the
house.
Well, I'll put
houses.
The shirt back on. I'll cover it up. But
oh my gosh.
I think it was worth it for that.
Just if you're not watching on video, Jackson
has a production builder shirt.
Put on D.R. Horton shirt.
It says
shirt.
America's Builder.
Richard put on a shirt that says Renewal by Anderson.
That's me right there.
Oh my gosh. That
we
is
were
just...
talking about it with the windows that we restored over the summer. Because that was all we were doing. We were restoring these like 150-year-old windows. You know, we're putting like 80 years of life back into these things, you know? Like you put them back out there, you paint them. They're going to last another 80 years. Renewal by Anderson guarantees them for 6 to 12 years. I don't remember how long. Maybe
that's
they've got
crazy.
A 30-year guarantee.
Well, the warranty less, for all those production windows is less than 10 years.
Anyway, it just, yeah, we were talking about that a lot this summer.
To answer your question, I saw one of your videos and you're like, you know what? I forgot your exact wording, but you're like, I'm just going to say it. Like, Renewal by Anderson has got to be one of the worst things or something. And I reached out to Jackson on Instagram. I was like, I think I'm going to wear a shirt and just troll Brent for a few minutes. So I'll cover it back up.
It really is painful to sit there and look at that.
You got a 100-year window.
I had these made like just the cheapest ways. Just so to answer your question, no, we did not own these prior.
He sent me the video and I was like, oh, I'll get a D.R. Horton one.
Oh my gosh, that really is troubling.
That really
pissed
me off.
How we really feel. No.
Anyway, so what's going on in your world?
What are you wearing under that shirt?
Oh my gosh, dang. That is just...
We just threw him off big time.
No.
It really ruined my day. We're very busy. I hired a president, and that's a whole nother long story that probably ought to be its own episode. But we've got, you know, in the last year, the architecture side of our business has gone from 0 to 9.
Out of 10 or out of 100? A legitimate question.
Zero people to 9 people.
Got it. Okay. Sorry. I was like, what do you mean?
Yeah. Not. Yeah.
This one goes to 11. So.
And you know, from 0 to 10 in speed and stuff we're doing.
Yeah.
We got a call from a guy in London to be the architect for his house. It's just like, what? So the just exciting, cool, fun opportunities.
So you're saying you have 9 people on staff doing architecture?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
So
what does that look like?
And we need to hire probably 2 more.
What does that look like?
If you're
it does go to 11.
A good architect, let us know. What?
It does go to 11.
Yeah, exactly. Literally.
Yeah.
So, things are...
This one goes to 11.
What is that? Yeah.
Spinal Tap. You know they're coming out with a Spinal Tap too. I just read about it this morning.
They shouldn't.
The only reason they didn't ever do it is because there's some kind of legal stuff that kept them from coming out with the Spinal Tap too.
It's crazy.
But it's coming out.
It's happening?
Yes, it's happening.
So...
One guy... In the meantime, they go to his thing and he's got a store and he sells cheese and guitars. So he has these cheese boards on guitars. It's just like, if you know that humor of that movie, you'll get that. It's just
I want to go back to your architectures because podcast.
You mean my architects?
I want to go back to the architecture side of your business. You got 9 architects. What does that look like? Because you're doing your when does it design videos. You're consulting a lot on design stuff. Did you get more architects because you wanted to stamp them or because you need more people designing? What's your involvement level with the design of those architects? Are you letting them free reign? Do they have to believe in the 5 orders of architecture?
I think it's a whole another episode.
All right. So we'll leave it at that.
Because those are all... questions that deserve a good long answer.
Okay.
It goes to how do you build a business? It goes to what matters in design, why we do that, and what we think we're busy because no one else is doing what we're doing. Or I shouldn't say that. There are a lot of people doing what we're doing, but they're a niche. It's a small percentage of the market that is really understands classical design and understands how to do that. And so there's a rich and deep market available if you know classical stuff, and you know how to do that stuff. So it's exciting, and it's overwhelming, mm-hmm. and it is. I feel like we're in a .com business. It's growing so fast around here. It's just.
Does that then, like, when you get these, crazy. When you design these aren't just people in Texas, because you said like London or whatever, and.
Coming in Idaho, starting all over Texas, all over the country now, actually. And so doing one in San Diego, I mean, it's all over.
Does that then translate to now they use your mill and you ship your products out there?
So on those two, yes. And we think so on the other one. And so, they hopefully, I mean, the idea that is that we build this up, they do feed each other. And so... Design can feed the build jobs. Build jobs will require some of the mill work. And so,
could they also ever just say, hey, we want your plans, and then we're going to go take them to, because I'm sure a company in London, they've got plenty of architects or plenty of builders out there that are still building traditionally.
Yeah, we wouldn't be the builder there. We'd just be the architects.
Cool.
And so, and that's what's happening with these jobs outside of our areas is we're just the architect designers and we're not the builder.
There's such an interesting balance, I feel like, in the world right now. Well, my world is just, my eyes are being opened a lot to the world right now, I feel like, where Boston is its own ecosystem of so much really good building. And then also there's also the bad builders out there, or the people who, I say bad builders, but just people who just care about the bottom line, don't necessarily care about the quality that they're building and how they're going about doing it. And then there's a ton of people out there who look to the past. And so you kind of end up with a lot of cool, I don't know, we were talking about it earlier, how there's some people who have a career path, you know, working for your company, who would need to set down the tool bag in order to go manage people, go work on cool jobs and work on, you know, all this other stuff. And then there's a huge swath of people in Boston who, like, I worked for, like Dennis Semperbon, Rich Freiberg, Michael Burry, who are like really talented builders, who have never set down the tool bag, who are still, you know, working and turning and designing and are wildly successful.
Want to hear my theory on that?
Yeah.
I think there's a North-South thing going on. Hmm. And I think that...
Civil War all over again? Civil War of building?
Yeah. Well, it's not a civil war, but it is a different culture. Hmm. And I can't back this up, but I do think the theory holds, I think. Because I found the same thing. When I was in Boston... The number of craftsmen there and the number of people that you know, college educated people that were laborers, mm-hmm. For lack of a better word, still like Dennis, not as much now, of course he's 70, still doing the work by hand is more prevalent in the Northeast than it is in the South. Mm-hmm. I think, or my theory is that in the South, you know, at Thomas Jefferson, at a lot of these plantations, a lot of the great work was taken on by slaves, was done by slaves. And there was an attitude, there was a Southern attitude that you don't really do that, that the hand laborer was looked down upon more.
So you think there's still like subconscious cultural ties that have
I think there's subconscious cultural ties, because I think, you know, it's like my dad, you know, he's Canadian, but they, you know, I grew up in Dallas. He was embarrassed to tell, you know, his friends that I was a carpenter. And so there's something in the air, right? That mm-hmm. And yet up in the Northeast, I found that there was a greater respect for, and just a more of acceptance of people that would choose to be a carpenter and a tradesman. And that it seemed like the business owners here, just myself, for instance, might have only hung up their tool belt when they just gotten too old and it just was, you know, their body couldn't do the work, not because it wasn't as respected. And so, I don't know. That's my theory.
I still feel that today. Like, people look down on us as, like, you know, tradesmen.
Yeah.
It's kind of just, oh, you're just the worker.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, you know.
I'm doing cool stuff, though. Yeah. Have you seen what we do?
Well, the other kind of
just don't get it.
Crazy thing is, like, the last 15 years or so, like, people have been saying, like especially back in the early 2010s, all like, learn to code, you know, get a tech job. Mm-hmm. And now AI is like stealing all those jobs, and they should have been learn to cope, you know? Yeah. Coke. Because then you would have been good because your job is...
Get your ink can gouge out.
I don't even know what that is. So you know more than me.
Yeah, no. I think there's something there. I don't know whether my theory holds or not, but I did find that the respect for skill and trades in the Northeast is greater than it is in South.
I think it's flipping. Maybe it's because I'm in the Northeast right now, but I do think it's flipping because of what you're saying. I think a lot of people are recognizing there's a big market in the trades world right now. And like a lot of people who have gone and gotten a classical education at a university or whatever are recognizing like, hey, I'm not getting fulfilled by that necessarily. That was my experience where it wasn't as fulfilling to me. And then I went into trades and I'm like, whoa, this is like exactly what I want to do. One of those kind of situations. So I wonder if more of that is going to swing, especially with the cost of education going up.
So you said earlier, like a few minutes ago, that there's still builders up in like Boston, I'm guessing, mm-hmm. that are not building that great of houses. They're just after the bottom line. That to me, when you said that, it's like, how embarrassing, because like I mean, here it kind of like everything is a little cookie cutter-ish, mm-hmm. like all these communities, but like in Boston, like I feel like you have all these great examples of houses. Like how could you like then build something you see down here, you know?
I mean, it is funny too, because while I'm saying all that, the quality of poorly built houses is still, there's still a design element. Like the floor is still higher than our floor here, if that makes sense.
Like it's pier and beam.
Like, see, because no. Like the floor, like the lowest level of builder out
there. Oh, the bottom
there.
Layer there is higher than the bottom layer.
So like the worst builders out there are still building better than our worst builders here.
See, I don't think that's true, because I
building better, but the design philosophies behind it. Like no one's building like, one, they don't have the land to build McMansions, but the McMansions aren't the same way. You know what I mean? They still have, gabled in returns, you know, on their poorly built vinyl siding, you know.
I just, I know what you're saying. Unfortunately, there's bad building everywhere. I mean, there is. And so
that's money, right? Like, but if your bottom line can make it.
I found that, I think this is what you're saying, is that the traditional Colonial Revival houses up there are better than the Colonial Revival houses down here. I think it's to your point that they have so much good stuff to look at. They can't screw it up as bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so that they aren't, and it's a different market. Texas is a brick market, is a stone market. And so you're not going to see sided houses. And when they are done here, they're really badly done, and versus the sided houses that are up in the Northeast. And so the, there's such different markets.
Apples and oranges.
But yes, a little bit, but it's just, unfortunately, production building is production building is production building.
I guess I'm just thinking like,
really troubling.
If I'm just like the builder up in the Northeast, it's almost like if you're like in a classroom and there's like an assignment and you're like looking around at what everyone else has, you're mm-hmm. like, oh crap, you know, I'm not doing this right. I feel like there's that more of that thing, you know, like you're seeing all the other houses that are beautiful.
Yeah.
And yet you're like, what did you produce?
Well, I like let's take it to Europe, right? I think they're, and they don't have this exact same market as we do, but I think their starter houses are better than our starter houses. I think it's partly because they have a tradition and a quality standard. Like when we went to Ireland to play golf and look at architecture, even the 1,500, 2,000 square foot houses had a stone wall around the outside of their house. Like I was like, you would never in a starter house put a stone wall outside the outside. There was a standard and a level. Well, you have to do that. I mean, you wouldn't build less than that. You wouldn't, you know, put Haidite block or something up there. It was just interesting that their bottom standard was still higher than ours. But I think it's because they have a tradition of hundreds of years of quality building.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they build house with solid masonry walls and things like that. We don't really do that. And so, why would they do that? Well, because they have a tradition of doing that for hundreds of years.
And not only a tradition of doing that, but using the same materials to do a lot of that stuff. Like when we visited Paris, one of the crazy things was they were like, Yeah, a lot of the stones that you'll see from this wall that was the outer wall of the city are now at the base of this building, and they're now used here. And then they kind of know the track of like where these stones were mined from this quarry and are now being used here. And they're like, when you mine them from the quarry, 900? What? You know, like that kind of stuff.
So we're starting a relationship with a company in England that I'll tell you about later. But it was fascinating. We went over to their shop, went over to their deal. The way they get lumber over there, and they've been getting lumber over there from France for a long time, they actually will get, their lumber providers will get them stands of trees. And so they will.
What does that mean? What's a stand of trees?
From the same forest, two trees right next to each other or within the same acre. And so that they are drinking from the same water, they have the same soil, they have the same light and sun and things like that, so that, you know, they're getting, you know, so let's say they need for a job, they need, you know, 10,000 board feet of wood. And let's say a tree, each tree is 2,000 board feet, or just throwing those numbers out. They'll have five trees from this same little area. They will get taken down all at the same time, cut all at the same time, stuck. They don't kiln dry like we kiln dried. Like we kiln dried down to 6 or 8%. They're like, their boards are between 12 and 18%. And you know, if you do pressure treated lumber,
install it?
Close. When you do pressure treated lumber, like if you put a moisture meter on it, it could be 20, 25%, 19%, and it's wet. You can feel it. Mm-hmm. So their wood is still what we would consider wet. But they're using and laying out this lumber. It was such an interesting contrast to the way we get our lumber. And, you know, he's saying, well, this is the way we've been doing it for hundreds of years, that this is how you get lumber. And so as we considered our relationship with them, we're like, there's no way of tracking in America where your lumber comes from. Like where in the forest and what trees and who's doing it. You get lumber and it might come from the same region, but it's not like the same trees mm-hmm. next to each other. It was a fascinating insight.
Do their grain variations just look so similar?
That's what they're doing.
That's what I was going
to
ask.
So the color, it matches much more closely. I mean, if you've tried to,
match.
I'm looking at some of our walls here and those are pretty even, but you'll lay some floors down sometimes and there'll be all these different colors and different things. You're like, and they don't have that as much. Mm-hmm. And so it's just like, ooh, that's pretty slick actually, that you're getting lumber to see it laid out in their shop. Actually the tree, okay.
Yeah.
Stuck, you know, cut into 8-quarter things and then air dried. So they had the sticking in between it, but they're letting it air dry there for, you know, 4 to 6 months.
That's what I was going to say. How early do they have to order this lumber in order to get that to happen? You almost have to have a vertical monopoly on lumber.
It's their relationship with their lumber providers, right? And so that's so cool. How they think about getting lumber.
What are they mostly, what species are they using? Like
a lot of oak.
Yeah.
A lot of oak. And so anyway, it was fun. I don't know how we got off on that, but it reminded me that when we were talking about different regions and how they do stuff. But the way they practice even getting lumber is so different. And that the American mentality towards building mm-hmm. is very, very different from the European model. Our speed, our production, our cost. Some things are good. A lot of them, from a craft perspective, I don't think don't hold up the traditions.
One of the companies that North Bennett works with really closely is Gurney's Lumber. They're like a green lumber primarily, but they do kiln dried and everything else. Family owned like business in the thing. And they took us through their process of like getting the tree to, you know, going to the end of it. But it was interesting. And I'm assuming there's a lot of similarity to other lumber mills and stuff in America. But the way that Gurney's did it is they like 1099 out their tree cutters. So they're not the ones going to the forest cutting the trees. They just have worked with the same people over a number of years and they know, okay, yeah, this guy's good. He'll bring us a couple of trees, whatever. He'll fell a couple of trees. He'll bring them to us. We can trust him. We trust that it's not full of buckshot. We trust that it's not, you know, full of metal or anything, not going to mess up our blades. And then they go from there. And then Gurney's kind of takes it and moves through. But the idea of having one of those guys go out and then get I'm going to hold off these section of trees. I'm going to fell them in a way to where we can use every one of them and then go bring them to a job site. Like, oh, I wish we had that layer of organization and that layer of thing here, because that would be so neat.
So there, you know, one thing I've discovered over the last 2 or 3 years is that the American mentality towards building is not a craft mentality. Okay. It is a speed and production and ingenuity mentality. And this goes back to the Industrial Revolution and, you know, how we clear cut our forests, how we built. You go back to, there's a book on the Industrial Revolution of America. And one of the things it chronicles is that, you know, America in 1820 is a backwater. By 1870, 1880, it is a almost world leader that by the turn of the century is a world leader in production and in the way they built things. I think I might have told this story before, but one of the things that Samuel Colt went, when he went to one of the World's Fairs in London, he brought his revolver. And one of the things that amazed people about his revolver is that you could take three revolvers and take the parts of one and put them in the parts of another. Whereas the mentality in England and stuff like that had been to custom make every little thing. So every striking pin, every barrel was different. And he had basically, through an industrialized process, had made everything exactly the same. So much so that they said that when Cadillac went to England in the 1930s and basically took an engine out of one car, put it in the other car, and you know, made it go, they were just blown away. And so you hear these, as much as I want, and especially in this thing about this podcast, this passion for craft, a higher degree of interest in craft. Unfortunately, this American ingenuity, this American, you know, mindset is just, it's hard to get us to think like that. And I was thinking about it because the way they think about harvesting trees and the way they think about, you know, getting wood to a job site, ours is such a production speed.
How fast can we get it there?
How fast can we get it there? Yeah. You know, what's the cost as opposed to, wait. What do you want it to look like when it, you know, what, how about grain quality? How about color? How about, you know, it's just, it's something that we have to deal with, right? It's something we have to manage.
Do you think that flipping the process on its head is one of the reasons why your company's starting to boom right now, is because you're taking a passion for that? Or do you just think it's like stuff's going on, you know?
The more the market heads towards cookie cutter, then the more the market heads towards, let's put the doors in a house. Well, there's the door store and there's the 8 doors you can choose from, versus us going, well, wait, where's the historic precedent? Let's custom build something that matches a story, that's a narrative. Is this, you know, picking from the door store, picking from the, you know, the roof store, picking from the window store, is, as the more the market goes that direction, because it's faster, because it's cheaper, because it's more efficient, the more our company like ours begins to shine, because we just have a different mm-hmm. perspective. The market's going that way. It is. And houses will continue to be cookie cutter and ugly, in my opinion. And so the opportunity for a company like ours and any company out there that kind of swims against that, you know, current is, has an opportunity,
mm-hmm.
whether they get it right or not. I mean, I think, Richard, that's why people appreciate you guys so much on our jobs. We hear a lot of our customers appreciating you guys because you care about craft,
mm-hmm.
because you take your time to do it right. You're respectful, clean cut guys, but you're also do really good work. And the customer notices that. And, you know, our customers comment on the quality of our subs, and that's not something that's common and everyday anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate that. That's good to hear. Cause I do make an effort to, well, it kind of comes naturally when you like this stuff anyways,
right?
Like, you tend to generally care about what you're doing. Yeah. I think, as you said, well, as everything becomes more cookie cutter, you're always going to have those people who are just like, they want something more,
yeah.
You know, and they want something a little bit special they've already been on their starter house. They've kind of went to their intermediate house, and now they're like, they know a little bit about housing. Maybe they built a few houses, and now they know, like, remember on my last house, I didn't like this. I didn't like this hollow corridor. I want it maybe, you know, just right. Learning little things along the way. And then educating people, you know, on like your channel. Your channel is just a pure education machine. So I think a lot of people are maybe seeing your stuff and being like, I didn't even think about that. And now, like, they can't unsee the bad designs. Mm-hmm. And now they're like, I want that guy to do it. Cause that's the Instagram flip page guy, you know? Yeah. That, what is that? That paper, yeah. Wax paper,
yeah,
whatever it is.
Yeah, tracing paper, yeah. Vellum. It's the education's huge. And I think I teach and share because I love it, right? Just, I love it. I want other people to know about it and get excited about it. But yeah, I mean, you think about how people are trained. We talked about college a little bit earlier, and that system, I think, is broken. And I think there's a renewed interest in the craft, a renewed interest in trade, because it's not going down that road.
One collaboration I did not see coming was you and Farmhouse on Boone, because Ashley watched that girl's videos. Yeah, and I was looking at your thing. He's like, yeah, I'm here with Farmhouse on, or I'm at, you did the walk around at her house, and I'm like, what? Did you know that he was doing stuff with her? It was funny. That's a cool spot she has.
It's an awesome spot, and she's doing, it's special.
And the reason I bring that up is because she probably didn't even, I don't know anything about her, but I'm guessing she probably just found your design videos, and then she's building the house, and she's like, I want this guy to do it, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if
I think she wanted something traditional, and we did find each other that way. You know, the way they're living, the way they're, you know, she's basically a homesteader, and
yeah,
I don't know if you'd call her a homesteader. She's known for her sourdough bread, and mm-hmm. she had her
big family,
and mm-hmm. so she has a huge following. But that's her whole, you know, she's bought into the whole story. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for her to live in some, you know, white box with, you know, steel windows is just, you know, antithetical to everything that she's living for. And, mm-hmm. and so how does she build a new house today that has an old soul? Mm-hmm. And so they found
this.
That's cool.
Point of the series. Yeah.
Well, thank you guys for watching episode one of the Patrick for a Craft podcast.
A lot of great stuff
three.
Coming for season three.
Yeah,
we've
left you with a couple cliffhangers here, yeah. So we'll be circling back on those in a bit. But thanks for watching. We'll see you in the next one.